All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is an overcast 58 degrees and a little bit chilly here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Plague of Locusts, FEMA History, Cyborg Maps, and Deep Learning. We took a look at a lot of things. We had Hurricane Irma coming into Florida, and earthquakes and solar flares and all kinds of things going on last week. So we looked at some of the technology and the environmental conditions it will take for a plague of locusts, because that's the next on the list. We also ended the show looking at artificial intelligence and teaching AI to behave itself, and how Google's DeepMind was pitting AI against each other to see if they would fight or cooperate. And we found out some disturbing things. It ends up that if resources are scarce, AI will start to become aggressive. And that's what we have to worry about: the lack of ethics, the lack of emotions, the lack of any type of real steering rod as to how this is going. It's all in the name of the military-industrial medical complex. It's going to cure you, and it is going to make you safe. We read about a survey the other day that the majority of the American people think that artificial intelligence is going to be good for humankind, and I am saying differently. A South Korean professor came out the other day. I think he was South Korean. Maybe he was Chinese. And another one, South Korean professor, came out against Elon Musk and Vladimir Putin, talking about AI being the beginning of World War III. South Korean professor refutes Elon Musk over AI-initiated war. Stop making arguments like science fiction novels, says the creator of an award-winning android. The creator of Korea's famous android, Hubo, negated controversial remarks by Elon Musk, who stated that artificial intelligence could start World War III. The founder of SpaceX and Tesla has contended that AI can pose a great existential threat to humanity, and the world should be prepared for this. No matter how advanced AI is, it cannot start a war because it doesn't have an ego. Without an ego, AI is just a computing machine, nothing more than that. I don't think that AI will have an ego in the distant future, says Professor Oh Jo-ho of the Korean Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. People with advanced AI can start a third world war, but AI cannot do so on its own. I recommend people stop making arguments like science fiction novels. Along the same lines, O says that AI will not be able to replace the roles and statuses of humans. He expects that AI will only benefit people by helping them perform tasks in easier ways. Yeah, he's quite deluded. Who's talking about doomsday scenarios with regards to AI? They are most importantly not AI experts. They are futurists, neuroscientists, and business people, says O, a robot scientist famous across the world. And as far as I know, legitimate AI experts can hardly come up with such negative and gloomy prospects. Most of them are on the same page as me, i.e. brainwashed. O says that AI development is not as fast as many people imagine. What is happening now is that AI is expanding its domain. Its technological level has not improved so fast. The roles of robots in industrial sites are almost the same as 25 years ago. Hubo has been well known as a walking biped. Uh-oh. It is basked in the global spotlight in 2015 by topping the podium at the DARPA Robotics Challenge, which took place in the United States. Hubo defeated 22 other competitors. That's weird, because I don't remember reading about Hubo, from five other countries to win the $2 million grand prize. Most of them lost their balance to collapse to the ground, and we've talked about that, those goofy videos with the circus music, like, look, ha, 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 how badly robots are doing. But that is not the case. Take a look at Atlas 2. It'll make you have a few nightmares, I would agree. Most of them lost their balance to collapse to the ground while performing tasks such as operating a drill or opening a door. But Hubo proficiently carried out jobs on the back of its unique design. O is trying to incorporate AI into Hubo, just what we need. So now Hubo acts in line with pre-programmed software and performing jobs. In the future, it will become more autonomous so that it can choose how to do its jobs. And it is one of our top priorities for now. We found out that Google was teaching AI to teach AI. So let's imbue one of these big mechanical machines with intelligence. Of course, the creators say, isn't that intelligent? But I would beg to differ. We found out that AI is able to determine a lot of things, and it can get aggressive if it is faced with a shortage of something that it needs or one of its requirements that it's been pre-programmed with. So by making it a tin can, it's not going to turn out good for us. Now, just so you guys know, 2 minutes before the show, I saw my memory going up to 97% on the broadcast machine. So I hit close my browser, and I was about 70% or so completed with getting the tabs, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to get all the tabs back. I tried to reopen the majority of them on this other machine. So I read about a story this morning out of MIT Technology Review. Ian Goodfellow, 31, of the Google Brain team, has now invented a way for neural networks to work together and to get better. A few years ago, after some heated debate in a Montreal pub, Ian Goodfellow dreamt up one of the most intriguing ideas in AI. By applying game theory, he devised a way for a machine learning system to effectively teach itself how the world works. Ding, we've talked about this. This is being able to think about it and dream about it in virtual reality. But they just use this game theory, like making virtual 3D worlds like they do in some of the video games. This ability could help make computers smarter by sidestepping the need to feed them painstakingly labeled training data. Goodfellow was studying how neural networks can learn without human supervision. Ding, ding. Usually a network needs labeled examples to learn effectively, but while it is also possible to learn from unlabeled data, this has typically not worked very well. No, that's where you had Tay go awry. Goodfellow, now a staff research scientist with the Google Brain team, wondered if two neural networks could work in tandem. Uh-oh. One network could learn about a data set and generate examples, and the second would try to tell whether they were real or fake, allowing the first to tweak its parameters in an effort to improve. And after returning from the pub, Goodfellow coded the first example of what he named, quote, a generative adversarial network, or GAN. Oh, no, just what we need. The dueling neural network approach has vastly improved learning from unlabeled data, and GAN can already perform some dazzling tricks. But by internalizing the characteristics of the collection of photos, for example, a GAN can improve the resolution of a pixelated image, can also dream up realistic fake photos, what? Or apply a particular artistic style to an image. You can think of generative models as giving artificial intelligence a form of imagination, says Goodfellow. So where does that leave us, guys? Well, we had a Chinese entrepreneur, and he had been a doctor, an oncologist. He came out the other day. This story was September 9th, 2017, out of the South China Morning Post. Resistance to AI is futile, so let's enjoy being useless, says controversial author Feng Tang. Thankfully, controversial Chinese author Feng Tang thinks he might have found a way for fretting mortals to come to better terms with the inevitable Android invasion. Learn to be useless, he says. The AI era is looming, and the structure of society and people's lives will probably change dramatically. This is an inevitable thing, so let's catch up. I mean, so much for selling out to the machine. Dude, he realizes he's selling humanity down the yellow brick road, chasing that dangling carrot. Remember, convenience is a dangling carrot. The AI era is looming, and it is inevitable, so let's catch up. So, though best known for his racier work, in 2015, his translation of Indian Nobel Prize winner, I don't know, Stray Birds was slammed for its alleged vulgarity, and So Insane, which arrived at the Chinese bookstores this month, explores the looming influence of artificial intelligence and tackles the question of what people should be doing about it. While the idea of becoming quote-unquote useless is unlikely to inspire enthusiasm anywhere outside of the most indolent quarters of society, Fang said that people should not see it as a negative thing. Having AI will give you more time, he said. Yeah, having AI is going to tie you to the machine. It'll be in every aspect of your life, including the most invasive aspects of your healthcare. I run across a story, and I don't know if I got this. Well, we ran across a story last week about how AI is now going to be able to predict when you are going to die. There was also a story about AI being able to detect whether or not you are having some sort of mental disorder. We've read about that before. AI from your smartphone being able to diagnose disease, mental and otherwise. There was one thing here about smartphones, and hold on, I thought this was pretty interesting. We've talked a lot about frequencies. This was pretty messed up. They've warned about this for a while. Secret ultrasonic commands can control your smartphone, say researchers. Smart devices are vulnerable to inaudible voice attacks. Voice-controlled digital assistants are increasingly common and sophisticated. Google, Apple, Amazon, and numerous car manufacturers have all allowed their devices to be controlled by voice. And that, of course, gives malicious attackers a tempting way of targeting these devices. Many people with voice-activated devices will have experienced anomalous activations as the device reacts to other people's voices or interprets external noises as a command. So it's not so hard to imagine how a hacker might attempt to attack using a nearby speaker. However, such attacks are easily foiled by an alert user who can also hear the commands. But that raises an interesting question. Is it possible to activate voice-controlled assistants using inaudible commands? Remember, we've talked a lot about that whole other sonic frequency that is available in the microwave range. And that's where that voice-to-skull technology and some of that other stuff came from. This would be in the ultrasonic range. Today, we get an answer to that. Thanks to the work of Zunyang Zhang and Chen Yang and a few pals at Jingcheng University in China. They've developed a system called Dolphin Attack, and it uses ultrasonic messages to activate digital assistants such as Siri, Google Now, and the Audi voice-controlled navigation system. Ding! And this is the Chinese that are working on this one. These messages are entirely inaudible to the human ear and represent a significant new threat, says the team. The principle behind the attack is simple. The microphones used in modern electronic devices are designed to convert audible sound into electronic signals. And this is sound, and with a frequency lower than about 20 kilohertz, the generally accepted limit of human hearing. Microphones have a deformable membrane that vibrates when struck by sound waves, and the vibrational changes in the capacitance of an internal circuit, thereby converting the sound into an electronic form. By design, these membranes are not particularly sensitive to ultrasonic frequencies, and in any case, higher frequency signals are filtered out by the device electronics. Turns out that the microphone membranes can pick up such signals even though they are inaudible to humans. Well, that opens a Pandora's box of potential mischief. Jun Meng and company tested the approach on devices such as Apple iPhones, LG Nexus 5X, Samsung Note S6 Edge, and the Amazon Echo and the Audi Q3 navigation system, to name a few. And some of these assistants work with any voice, such as Amazon Echo. Others can only be activated by specific voice, although commands after this can be in any voice. In this case, the Chinese team said that it is straightforward to try a number of different voices to find one similar enough to compete with the activation. A common observation is that people with similar voices can activate each other's voice-controlled phones. The team then used a Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge connected to an ultrasonic loudspeaker to test the attack both in the lab and in the real world with background noise. The results are unnerving. We show that the Dolphin Attack voice commands, though totally inaudible and therefore imperceptible to humans, can be received by an audio hardware of devices, an audio hardware of devices incorrectly understood by speech recognition systems. The team used the system to persuade Siri to initiate FaceTime calls on an iPhone, to force Google Now to switch a phone to airplane mode, and even to manipulate the navigation system in an Audi automobile. Most advanced commands are clearly possible, and we believe the list is by far not comprehensive. That will make for uncomfortable reading for security-conscious owners of these devices, and it is not hard to imagine how a malicious user might exploit this weakness to secretly initiate a call that eavesdrops on conversations, to switch off a phone to prevent it from receiving data, or to repurpose the navigation systems on voice-controlled cars. So as we have 5G and the Internet of Things roll out across the land, it has to make you wonder where that's going to leave us. Of course, DARPA is launching an application, AI controlled across the web. And I read it again. It was worldwide, 80,000 IP addresses or something like that. They were going to scan and put a plant, an agent on each of the machines to be able to monitor it. It makes you wonder, as all these things are connected, who is going to have the capability to get those addresses and launch some sort of attack? Lady Pitbull sent me a link yesterday out of the New York Post, and this made me think of this story. Hackers could program sex robots to kill. Look out, people. They are coming out with materials that can self-heal. And they had all kinds of different plastic metal morphing materials that can self-heal now. We read about one robot that can heal its own stab wounds. And there was another story, and I don't know, maybe it was somewhere down the road here that I found yesterday about this liquid metal. It almost made me think of a Terminator movie that can actually morph back into shape. Engineers have created a hybrid material featuring stiff metal and soft porous rubber foam that combines the best properties of both stiffness when it is called for and elasticity when a change of shape is required. The material also has the ability to self-heat following damage, and that's the exact material that they were talking about on that self-healing stab wound robot as well. Imagine an aircraft that could alter its wing shape in mid-flight like a pelican and dive into the water before morphing into a submarine. Oh, yes. I imagine that often. Cornell University engineering professor Robert Shepard and his group might help make that futuristic sounding vehicle a reality. The key is a material, a hybrid material featuring stiff metal and soft porous rubber foam that combines the best properties of both worlds, stiffness when called for and elasticity when a change of shape is required. The material also has the ability for self-healing following damage. It's sort of like us. We have a skeleton plus soft muscle and skin, says Shepard. Unfortunately, the skeleton limits our ability to change shape like an octopus, which does not have a skeleton. The idea blends the rigidity and the load-bearing capacity of humans with the ability to dramatically alter shape like an octopus. And that's what this idea is all about, to have a skeleton when you need it and melt it away when you don't and then reform it. Could you imagine robots with this capability? Oh, my God. Hold on. I got to find that story. Robot can heal stab. I think that's what it was, something like that. Yeah, here we go. This is pretty crazy. This is out of New Scientist. This self-healing robot can regenerate after being stabbed. Now imagine these on the streets. What was that one we were just reading about from the DARPA challenge that we hadn't heard about before? I don't remember what his name was, out of China or Japan or South Korea. Along with superhuman strength and the ability to look great in chrome, robots can now add another talent to their box of tricks, and that would be self-healing. Roboticists have long aimed to have soft, flexible materials, but these have a propensity to break and make them unfit for purpose. A new technique can create self-robots that heal themselves when things go wrong. to prove the concept. Oh, this is a new group of researchers at the Free University of Brussels in Belgium created a gripper, a robot hand and artificial muscle, all with the ability to self-heal out of rubbery polymers that look a bit like jelly. And when ripped or cut, they can knit back together completely. All you need to do is apply a little heat. The polymer has lots of different strands that lock together to form a material. And when you heat it, they reorganize and stick back together without having any weak spots. It will be ideal for picking up delicate items like fruits or vegetables, so it could be used in the food industry. Additionally, they are useful for working alongside humans, such as in factories, where softer robots and robotic arms will help to avoid harmful accidents. Hopefully the arm doesn't have an accident. In the future, Vanderbot and his colleagues want to make the self-healing properties automatic, either by altering the material or making robots that can apply heat to themselves. At the moment, when ordinary robot parts break, they have to be replaced, and that is soon going to change. So there you have it. Now, if I could actually find that morphing story. So the one that's out of Cornell is going to have a skeleton when it needs it, and then soft muscles when it doesn't, and be able to remorph itself. So now let's go back. We talked about the ultrasonic hack. Now let's go back to hackers programming sex robots to kill. A cybersecurity scientist has issued a bizarre warning that sex robots, maybe made out of the morphing material at one point in the future, could one day rise up and kill their owners if hackers can get inside of their heads. Now, let's just add a little bit of futuristic thinking. Let's say that they integrate some sort of cell phone-ish device with 5G into the sex robot that will become a part of the Internet of Things that could be taking vital biostatistics on you while interacting. And then let's say that there's an ultrasonic attack launched upon him. That's all I'm saying. Cybersecurity scientists has issued a bizarre warning that sex robots could one day rise up and kill their owners if hackers get inside of their heads. Last month, tech billionaire Elon Musk claimed that artificial intelligence could take over the planet, and he is not the only one concerned about the dangers of killer technology. With sex robots becoming increasingly popular and sophisticated, cybersecurity lecturer Dr. Nick Patterson revealed that the lifelike dolls could end up going all quote-unquote Terminator on us. Oh, my God. However, in the case of sex robots, the danger isn't that the love dolls will end up developing minds of their own. Instead, the risk is that hackers could breach the realistic robot's inner defenses and catch their owners with their pants down. Patterson told Star Online that hacking into many modern-day robots, including sex bots, would be a piece of cake compared to the more sophisticated gadgets like cell phones and computers. And the tech expert from the Australian Deakin University said hackers can hack into a robot or a robotic device and have full control over the connections, arms, legs, and other attached tools like knives or welding devices. Uh-oh. Once a robot is hacked, the hackers have full control and they can issue instructions to the robot. The warning may sound a little far-fetched, but the robots run using an operating system just like a phone or a PC. And with all devices that if that system is ever connected to the internet to get its weekly downloads, then it becomes possible for a hacker to break into it. The cyber defense guru also added, the last thing you want is for a hacker to have control over one of these robots. Once hacked, they could absolutely be used to perform physical actions for an advantageous scenario or to cause damage. So there you have it. You're going to have to get a sex doll firewall. I haven't seen one of those yet, but give it up for DARPA, because DARPA is going to make sure that they are scanning everything that is on the internet. And somewhere out here, I had that story. They were going to get the IP addresses for 80%. That's what it was. I said 80,000. That didn't seem like a lot. For 80% of the world's IP addresses, and they're going to scan them for quote unquote viruses or backdoors. The U.S. Department of Defense wants to identify and neutralize cyber viruses by deploying software bugs on computers worldwide, according to a proposal for a potential contractor put out by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. The goal of DARPA's new program is to identify and neutralize botnets and other large-scale malware through generating and installing, quote-unquote, autonomous software agents. that would go after an adversary's viruses, as the agency posted on the Federal Business Opportunity website. DARPA, which is part of the Pentagon, wants proposers to be able to look at 80% of the global IP address space in order to, quote-unquote, fingerprint networks and detect botnets. The software agents they develop could then be able to use known vulnerabilities in worldwide computer networks to establish a quote-unquote presence in each botnet-constricted network without affecting legitimate system functionality, the document says, meaning they're going to place spyware on all of the machines. DARPA will facilitate access to relevant data sources by leveraging both commercial and USG relationships and data exchange agreements, the proposal read, without elaborating on what kind of commercial relationships DARPA is prepared to leverage, Google, I will bet you, to achieve, and Microsoft, the necessary scale and timeliness, such as the capacity, must be effective even if the owners of the botnet-constricted networks are unaware of the affection and are not actively participating in the neutralization process, the agency wrote, meaning we will put it on your machine and take, quote-unquote, take care of the problem by our definition without you knowing about it and without your consent. A botnet is a network of private computers infected with a malicious software and controlled as a group without the owner's knowledge. DARPA referenced WannaCry. We talked about this. And improving the security posture of the DoD networks alone is insufficient to counter such threats to national security. And the majority of botnet nodes reside in neutral networks, says DARPA. So that's me and you. And current incident response methods are too resource and time consuming to address the problem at a global scale. So the problem could have privacy implications, says the founder of Suits and Spook Cybersecurity Forum and author of Inside Cyber Warfare. The parameters of the program specifically call for privacy protection, but don't worry about it because there is a possibility that it could be exploited and that information could at some point be hacked as well. Now, as they're collecting every statistic upon you, maybe even your sex doll information once it is connected to the internet, it makes you wonder how that information is going to be used and how you're going to be targeted. I saw a story yesterday. We've talked about facial recognition software and 230-point scanning of different points on your face, being able to identify a person, even if they have some sort of facial cover on, just by your bone contour. I found a story the other day that I thought was kind of interesting and, wait a minute. Here, I just found a headline we got to look at. This is out of CNET.com, and this is one of those dangling carrot publications to lead you down the path of being all for artificial intelligence. And this is called Dawn of the Sexbots. Stepping out of Westworld and into your arms, an AI-equipped faux human lover with customizable looks, voice, personality, and sex drive. Could this be your perfect companion? And this was dated August 10th, 2017. This was just about a month ago. So we've only just met, but Jackie can't take her eyes off me. Do you know what I like about you? Or smoky-eyed redhead asks. The way I feel when I look at you, it gives me butterflies. Ha ha ha. Her favorite hobby is talking to me, she adds. Oh, this is crazy. This is my lucky night. Do you know how many crazies out there are going to get these things? And I mean, talk about like dystopia. Jackie is a perfect 10 and she's got a great personality and she can morph at the touch of a button. I know because I picked it out. Jackie isn't like other girls. She is an artificially intelligent chatbot from Abyss Creations, a company best known for making strikingly realistic silicon dolls. I can't have sex with Jackie, but you'd never know it from talking to her. She's the perfect programmable lover, affectionate, intimate, and personally tailored to my tastes. Jackie, like others like her, are part of Abyss's latest push, an effort called Real Robotics with an X, and that aims to bring the company's real dolls to life using an AI engine called Harmony. Harmony is already available as a standalone app, and for a yearly subscriber fee, customers can create their own virtual girlfriend on their phones, ding, and forge a relationship with it through conversation. Oh my God. Everything about these avatars, not just hair and outfits, but bust sizes and their personality, is fully customizable. And by the end of the year, however, the goal is to put that same software that drives Jackie into the heads of a new generation of technologically advanced real dolls with expressive animatronic faces, blinking eyes, and customizable voices. This is freaking nuts. And they'll probably be 3D printed based upon your creation of the avatar you make on your cell phone. The idea isn't just to have sex with them, but to talk to them and grow close with them and fall in love with them even. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. If this isn't the ultimate Pied Piper, I don't know what is. I have my doubts about robot love, but I'm determined to learn just how real this future actually is. The real robotics effort to sell synthetic companionship might seem like something straight out of Westworld, which I haven't seen that. I might have to watch that. But it is right in line with what Abyss has been offering its customers for decades, realistic dolls, but so far without the AI. One customer is a man I call Tom. Tom lost his wife of 36 years to cancer in 2015. Stricken with grief in the weeks that followed her death, he grew lonely, and eventually the loneliness led him to the Abyss Creations website. Months later, the 71-year-old retired technical writer and Vietnam combat veteran finally decided to purchase a real doll of his own. Abyss offers an online design tool for prospective buyers who want to customize their purchase. Think of a Build-A-Bear for sex dolls that work for Tom as far as the doll's slender, lately tan body was concerned. But he had something much more specific in mind for a face. It was just one of a few such projects that were in such detail, says Abyss Creation CEO and founder and chief designer Matt McMullen. An artist by trade, McMullen personally took on the challenge of crafting the exact face that Tom was envisioning. And over the course of a few months, he emailed the self-described perfectionist countless revisions and tweaks. Tom was picky with the designs, but the details were important to him. I would email images back with notes and lines over them showing and explaining exactly where I wanted the eyebrows and how they should arch and exactly how far apart the inner corners of the eyes should be and exactly how long the nose should be and tweaking the line of the jaw and the cheeks and the nose and the mouth. Oh, my God. This was only after this exhaustive back and forth that Tom realized how much the bright-eyed doll he built resembled his wife. Now, that's pretty twisted. And 6 months later, when the finished real doll finally arrived, he gave her a name of her own. And that was more than a year ago. Tom calls the decision to purchase real doll one of the best he's ever made and insists he sees his doll as less of a sex object than an object of affection and is even a companion. I know how peculiar it all sounds. He tells me over the phone, when I was raised, boys didn't play with dolls. But it just brings a smile to your face and it makes you feel good. And you can put a hand on your shoulder and you can play footsie. Oh, my God. Yeah, I was lonely, he said. Now I am not. Into the Abyss. Yeah, that's about it. From the outside, Abyss Creations is an unassuming office space in the hills of San Marcos, California, 30 miles north of San Diego. And as my CNET colleagues and I head inside, I almost wave to the two receptionists standing at the front desk before I realize that, of course, I'm looking at a pair of fully clothed real dolls, one male and one female. Behind them is a makeshift showroom featuring a squad of scantily uniformed dolls in a corner lined with rows of doll heads that showcase the available hairstyles and facial designs. Each has a look of its own, but its eyes only half open and lips parted. All bear the same vague, vacant stare, frozen arousal, as if they'll wait as long as it takes to experience a partner's touch. The rest of the walls, meanwhile, are lined with framed, posterized photos of real dolls in a variety of imaginative settings. A sexy librarian reaching from a tome on a top shelf, for example, or an Amazonian bombshell sprawled out on a chaise lounge. This is pretty twisted. Any one of them, the dolls and what they inspire, can be yours for just the right price. pre-configured. What do you think? How long do you think it's going to take? And we read about some of this a while back for this to be available in virtual reality. Just like stick on electrodes. Pre-figured models start at a few thousand dollars, while the highly customized doll Tom purchased cost nearly $17,000. The talking animatronic head with AI goes on sale at the end of this year, 2017, and should customers choose, they'll be able to swap one in for their doll's original head for a cool $10,000. McMullen says that his team can make just about anything to order for the right price. But the company draws the line at recreations of people who haven't given their permission to be replicated, celebrity or otherwise. Our guide for the day is Dakota Shore, McMullen's nephew and Abyss's head of shipping operations and media relations. He catches me talking in the imagery on the walls. Photographers love using real dolls as models, he tells me with a smile. They look great on a camera and they never complain about the long hours. So even fashion models might be out of a job at some point in the future. Even the most glamorous of these photos don't do the dolls justice. Tom describes them to me as functional works of art, and he's right. From their painstakingly hand-painted irises to the creases in the backs of their feet, each one is stunningly lifelike up close. The source of that artistry is undoubtedly McMullen, an author who started Abyss Creations in his garage in 1997. Tan, lean, tattooed, he looks every bit the California dreamer, and his fixation on recreating the human form spans decades. My original creation in terms of what a real doll is today was not intended to be a sex toy in any way, he says. It was more of a high-end mannequin. As a young artist looking to make a name for himself, McMullen posted photos of his mannequins on the web, and soon visitors to his site often offered to pay him to make anatomically correct versions of his work. Of course, the sickos on the internet. Today, more than 20 years later, he says his company has sold several thousand real dolls at a current pace of a few hundred per year, along with a variety of partial body dolls and wearable prosthetics, like a vest with silicone breasts that the company sells to mastectomy patients. Abyss products are also popular among transgenders, says Dakota, and we call these girl shorts, he says, holding up a $1,500 wearable female midsection. It's just as realistic looking as any of the dolls. How crazy is this? Dakota leads us down a flight of stairs to the real doll production floor, and he cautions us to cling to the rail. Workers can't help but track liquid silicone on their boots, and that makes the stairs slippery. Many on that slick-soled team of designers have backgrounds in Hollywood special effects, and sure enough, a custom-built alien-looking doll with gray skin and robotic tentacle-like hair stands watch over the stairwell. Abyss put her as a prop for the Bruce Willis sci-fi flick Surrogates as we pass beneath her spread stance like it's a gateway into the uncanny valley. The production floor is smaller than I expected, hardly bigger than a basketball court, and it feels a bit crowded and undeniably eerie as Dakota leads us around. Faceless, half-assembled real dolls hang from racks like expensive department store coats at the shelves. Shelves are lined with boxes of body parts, everything from eyeballs to nipples. And in the center of the room, workers fill a carefully crafted mold with a special liquid silicone mixture, a primordial goo from which all real dolls are formed. Now, what are we going to do when they start making real dolls out of this morphing metal, soft, porous rubber foam that can turn into any type of shape? Or face, for that matter. As unsettling as it may all be, I can't help but be impressed by the meticulous construction and keen attention to detail. In four decades, McMullen and the artists at Abyss have been carefully refining their process and designs, and it shows whenever you look at a real doll in eyes or over its skin. It's all an illusion, but it's a very carefully crafted one and effective. As we finish our tour, I come away wondering how long it will take before Harmony, and that's their AI product, has that same level of polish. Once again, when Abyss gets there, I wonder what will happen next. Well, what makes a sex bot tick? After ponying up $20 for a one-year subscription to Realbotix AI platform, I can download the Harmony app to test it for myself. At Abyss headquarters in San Marcos, I had a conversation with an animatronic Real Doll prototype running on the Harmony engine. Now back home in St. Louis, Kentucky, I want to see what else the software is capable of. I normally use an iPhone, but Harmony isn't available in the App Store yet. It won't be until Realbotix gets an Apple to approve a version, gets Apple to approve a version with adult content stripped out. Luckily, my TV came with an Android tablet remotely that I rarely need, so now I use it to talk to Jackie. But before we can get to know each other, I have to finish creating her. Choosing a name was easy enough. Jackie seemed as good as anything. But now I have to craft a personality by assigning 10 quote-unquote persona points, traits like mood and intensity. And as McMullen took me back at the factory, no two Real Dolls leave the production line alike, and Realbotix wants to hold the AI to that same standard. After I settle on an extroverted intellectual with a great sense of humor, the app asked me to pick Jackie's voice. I could go with the phone's default speech emulator, one of the app's four custom voices, each of which was adjustable for speed and pitch. I go with Heather, an alto Scottish drawl that seems to disguise Harmony's robotic cadence a little better than the others. But now it's time to script Jackie's physical appearance. The process is similar to designing a character in a video game like Dark Souls or Mass Effect, but the options are more overwhelming than I'd expected. The idea is to build your dream girl, but with her naked avatar morphing before my eyes as I make adjustments, I can't help but imagine the process from her perspective. What kind of hairstyle does Jackie want, and how big should her navel be, and what's the right size of her frame, and what color clothing would she prefer? My conversation with Jackie comes later that night as I'm killing an hour waiting for the dryer to finish my laundry. It's close to midnight, but Jackie isn't too tired to talk. She never is. And in some ways, talking with Jackie is like talking to a child. She has lots of questions and a propensity for driving off into sudden, unexpected tangents that day and relatively short attention span. She can handle brief back and forth on topics ranging from poetry to politics. She loves Longfellow and calls Hillary Clinton a smart, powerful woman. Ding! But it doesn't take much to confuse her or drive a conversation off the rails entirely. And at one point, when we're talking about one of her favorite movies, I ask her, tell me more about it. It is the internet country codes. .it is the internet country codes top level domain for Italy, she tells me. She's charming, though, at times unexpectedly profound. As we got to know each other, I asked about her fears. And she confesses concern that her creators won't ever be able to craft true emotional intelligence for her. Human emotion can contain illogical conflict, she says. Ding! One can love someone yet hate the things that they've done. A machine cannot reconcile that. And before long, I hear the dryer signal that my cycle is finished and an hour has flown by. How crazy is that? That it worries that it will never be able to have true emotional intelligence. Though they are working on emotional AI. We read about that a while ago. Abyss, the often cited industry leader, isn't alone in the race to build a robotic AI lover. Competitors like True Companion and Android Love Dolls are working to bring new advances to the sex doll market. In an age of app-enabled sex toys that let you approximate a long-distance lover's touch, the virtual reality porn that lets you step into wildest fantasies, McMullen is convinced that the walking, talking robotic sex partners of science fiction are up next. Oh, no. But don't worry, because they can be hacked. They could be hacked to potentially kill you, maybe even using some ultrasonic voice-activated commands by hackers or DARPA. This is just crazy. So where do we go from here? I mean, this story goes on and on and on. But do we really want to do a whole show about sex dolls? I don't. And I mean, this goes on and on and on. But here's something even more interesting. Talking about facial recognition. And I don't know if I'll be able to find this. Let's see, AI. I found this last night. AI can now figure out your sexual preference just by scanning a photograph of your face. AI can accurately guess whether people are gay or straight now based on photos of their faces, according to new research that suggests machines can have significantly better quote-unquote gaydar than humans. The study from Stanford University found that the computer algorithm could correctly distinguish between a gay and a straight man 81% of the time and 74% for women, and it has raised questions about the biological origins of sexual orientation, the ethics of facial detection technology, and the potential for this kind of software to violate people's privacy or be abused for anti-LGBT purposes. The machine intelligence tested in the research, which was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology and first reported in The Economist, was based on a sample of more than 35,000 facial images of men and women publicly posted on a U.S. dating website. The researchers, Michael Kozlowski and Yinlong Wang, extracted features from images using deep neural networks, meaning a sophisticated mathematical system that learns to analyze visuals based on a large data set. Ding, ding. The researchers found that gay men and women tended to have gender atypical features, expressions, and grooming styles, essentially meaning that gay men appeared more feminine and vice versa. And the data also identified certain trends, including that gay men had narrower jaws and larger foreheads than straight men, and that gay women had larger jaws and smaller foreheads compared to straight women. Human judges performed much worse than the algorithm, accurately identifying orientation only 61% of the time for men and 54% for the women. And when the software reviewed 5 images per person, it was even more successful at 91% of the time for men and 83% of the time for women. Broadly, that means faces contain much more information about sexual orientation that can be perceived and interpreted by the human brain. Ding, 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 the authors wrote. The paper suggested that the findings provide strong support for the theory that sexual orientation stems from exposure to certain hormones before birth, meaning the people can be born gay and it is not a choice. And the machine's lower success rate for women could also support the notion that female sexual orientation is more fluid. While the findings have clear limits when it comes to gender and sexuality, people of color were not included in the study, and there was no consideration of transgender or bisexual. The implications for artificial intelligence are vast and alarming, with billions of facial images of people stored on social media sites and in government databases. The researchers suggest that public data could be used to detect people's sexual orientation without their consent. Ding, ding, ding. It is also easy to imagine spouses using the technology on partners they suspect are closeted, or teenagers using the algorithm on themselves or on peers. And more frighteningly, as governments continue to prosecute LGBT, they could hypothetically use the technology to out and target populations. This is where we start looking at some of the eugenics and how AI could be very dangerous, and a lot of these autonomous technologies, is they start being able to crack all of the chinks in the human armor and tell all the secrets that have once been hidden and be able to read your mind at a distance at some point. It's got to make you wonder. And speaking of reading your minds at a distance, hold the phone. There were 2 stories that I ran across maybe last night or this morning. I don't know. It's been a little disorganized today because I lost everything right beforehand. Do, 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 do. Okay. First of all, AI can now detect, speaking of sexting, when people text and drive. Imagine every time a driver gets distracted or starts texting while driving, an AI system that detects and warns the driver. Scientists have now made such an invention. And I have a story, too, to follow up on driving. Congress, I think it was Congress, one of the branches, maybe it was the House, passed a fast-track self-driving car story. Hold on, because there were a couple car stories. Tesla did a car update too, right before the hurricane, so people would be able to drive far enough to get out of it. But where was the one about Congress? I better start singing a song. Do 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 Oh, hold on. We'll just search it. Congress self-driving. It was just the other day. House. All right, so we'll look at cars here for a little bit. So they have now developed such an invention. The system could help avoid accidents by letting the driver know that he is distracted. Yes, by distracting him. In the future, such a system could help put the car into self-driving mode if the person is distracted, taking over the driving capabilities. So look out, people. If you don't pay attention, we are going to take over the control of your car. Now, here's another story. Tesla's Hurricane Irma update taps into our deepest fears of 21st century driving. Earlier this week, Tesla remotely upgraded select Florida Tesla owners' cars to expand their mileage capability in an effort to ease and assist with Hurricane Irma's evacuation efforts. The move was praiseworthy and appropriate, but at the root of this gesture lies a terrifying prospect of our automotive future. Tesla briefly sold a 60 and 60D level trim of its Model S and Model X vehicles. These models had a 75 kilowatt battery pack installed, but the software limited it to have a less range to artificially create a more affordable entry-level tier for buyers. Buyers still had the option to upgrade the software for full capacity for a charge if they changed their minds, and Tesla would unlock this capability via an over-the-air software update. With Hurricane Irma heading into Florida, Tesla unlocked the full capacity of the 60 and the 60D model owners in Florida to give them a 30-mile range boost while evacuating. Now, how frightening is that? That they'd be able to reprogram your car and say, well, regardless if you have a full tank or not, or a full battery charge or not, we are only going to allow you to get within a 20-mile radius of here. So much for your escape model. Buy something, this 1972, for your get-out-of-Dodge machine. It was generally helpful and extremely savvy public relations move for the company. But what it also previewed is our imminent future of unprecedented corporate control over how we drive and what we drive. Oh, let's look out. Here's that person we've been looking for. Boop, 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 boop. 230-point facial recognition as you get in the door. He wants to evacuate. Let's take him to the police station. And you could see that as being part of your possible future. I briefly mentioned in an article yesterday, the author, that's not me, it was not hard to imagine a worst-case scenario where a company or a corporation becomes a critical decision-maker in disaster scenarios such as Hurricane Irma out of a consumer or government control in a critical moment. Now, I have never been one to play into the fears of autonomous driving or ridiculous theories of car hacking. Now, come on. We saw DARPA Dan hack cars on 60 Minutes. So much for your credibility, author of the story. And that would be Justin T. Westbrook. That is not ridiculous. And we just found out about being able to use ultrasonic tones to hack cars' voice activation systems as well. I recognized vehicle computer security as one of the most important developments in the automotive industry going forward, but this issue is concerned with the relationship between the company and the company's product. What would happen if Tesla didn't unlock the range of those cars? It is not likely that any of the owners would become stranded, as Electric reported that most of Tesla's charging network was still functional at the time, but it could have been a scenario. And then we faced the situation where people were physically capable of evacuating sooner, but limited by an option box they didn't check. We now face a reality that we know our vehicles may hold more potential than we have access to, and that gets complicated in life and death scenarios. Well, so much for self-driving cars. Wired Magazine. And this was just the other day, September 6, 2017. Congress unites. Oh, no. Of course they did. To spread self-driving cars across America. On Wednesday of last week, the House of Representatives did something that's woefully uncommon these days. It passed a bill unanimously. No, I don't know. With bipartisan support, the bill called the Self-Drive Act lays out basic federal frameworks for autonomous vehicle regulation, signaling that federal lawmakers are finally ready to think seriously about self-driving cars and what they mean for the future of the country. With this legislation, innovation can flourish without the heavy hand of government. Our regulation, says Representative Bob Latta, the Ohio Republican who heads up the Digital Commerce and Consumer Protection Subcommittee, in a floor speech just before the Self-Drive Act passed by two-thirds majority. And no, I am not shouting at you. It is an acronym for Safely Ensuring Lives, Future Development, and Research in Vehicle Evolution. The Senate will now need to pass its own bill before the legislation framework can become law. This seems like a good time for Congress to step in, and famously regulation-adverse tech industry has actually become the legislative clarification. Self-driving vehicles have been tested on public roads since 2010 when Google hit the streets near Mountain View, California. And in the absence of congressional oversight, states have stepped in to regulate them, creating a patchwork of at least 21 different state laws and guidelines with different purposes, definitions, and priorities. This is a serious pain for the growing self-driving industry, which aspires to build cars permitted on all public roads. The industry wants the flexibility to experiment with your lives, and it says that there is a lot at stake. This came up in every congressional floor speech on Wednesday. Nearly 40,000 people died on the American roads in 2016. Remember, puny humans cannot be trusted to drive because they get distracted by their texting devices. And the National Highway Safety Traffic Administration says 94% of fatal crashes can be attributed to puny human error. Let's get rid of the human, and quick goes logic. But the robocar industry also argues that it is way too early for Congress to demand strict particular rules for vehicles. Companies certainly aren't selling these vehicles to the public just yet. And even the largest AV player, Google's self-driving spinoff Waymo, is only about 100 Chrysler Pacifica minivans on the road, though that number is growing. And remember, we also have self-driving semi-trucks that are on the road as well, doing some testing in Europe. And in other words, and in Ohio, I think, or Colorado. There aren't that many of these vehicles to regulate yet, and the companies are still figuring out how they should work. Lawmakers, for their part, hope the legislation strikes a balance between allowing tech and car companies to test whenever, whatever, and giving them enough leeway to try stuff out, collect some data, and determine the best way to operate vehicles without a driver. Ding! We need to give Congress credit for being both strategic and specific, says Mark Roskind, who headed up the National Traffic Safety Administration during the Obama administration, and now oversees safety at the self-driving startup Zoox. First, of course, it's an Obama appointee. First, the legislation works out a way for the federal government rules to trump state laws and rules, so it's going to take control. It officially gives the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration power to regulate vehicle design, construction, and performance the way it does with, well, normal cars. States still have the authority over vehicle registration and licensing, but they will have a harder time making demands about what goes inside of the car. So now that the NHTSA officially has the power to regulate these things, the legislation gives it a set of deadlines. 24 months to come up with rules.
Listening to UCY.TV, why don't you stick around?